Now, where our lack has been, it seems to me, that we have not career planned a man from the time we started working in depth with him as to what the possibilities are for the future. But we should tell him, you know, not in these words, but in the idea, that we're going to teach you certain principles that are universal. And after you leave the service or leave college, you're going to join a new affinity group. Maybe it'll be a salesman. Maybe it'll be, you know, lawyer, somebody else, doctors. Now, when you do, you put these principles into practice in your new affinity group. So, the community ministry, as I see it, the emerging image of the Navigators is simply that we are broadening into new affinity groups. And that will be as broad as the occupations of the Navigator alumni. That's how broad it's going to be. But we've got an unsolved problem, and that is how to motivate these people to. I said the end result of the Navigators is a ministry in the community. Getting some specialists out of the military and out of college are stages toward our involvement in the Great Commission in the community. That's the end result of the Navigators, not the grave of the Navigators. The Navigators have always been committed to doing our share to see that the Great Commission is fulfilled. And we believe the way you do that is through raising up laborers. But there are other affinity groups in which laborers can be raised up other than the military and the collegiates. And if we just could put all of our alumni to work in their affinity group where they are right now, we'd have a big start toward accomplishing our objective in the Great Commission. Now, this is what I know you're doing to a degree in D.C. But where are the Navigators headed? I think that's where we're headed. Now, by a broad ministry, we don't mean that we're going to go every place from child evangelism to the old folks' home and everything in between. Although I think we might have an effect there. But we're just branching out into new affinity groups. Any comment you have on that? Yeah.
Where's the guy finding his new affinity group? At his job, most likely, would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question to discuss further. I think it's an interesting study to figure this out. And I've talked with people about it. That some say, well, your relatives, you know, you're able to communicate there. Somebody says your war buddies when you're military. But I believe that among men, occupation is more than 50% of it. Okay? Tom?
Would that necessitate then encouraging a man once he's out in this field to become the best he can?
Now, if he isn't, it'll affect his communication with the other people in the group, won't it? Maybe not to be the best, but he's got to have a good testimony.
Where a guy would be a key man and there's a conflict. conference and want to have let him have a key responsibility.
Now, when the navigators were first shifting over from military to college emphasis, I asked Warren Myers if he thought a man could be a college student and a disciple. And what his answer was, if he doesn't take more than 12 hours. That was his answer. So, a guy who is making subnormal grades, he hasn't got much of a platform, has he? To minister to other people? Yeah, you got to have a platform from which to speak, seems to me. So I think a person, he's got to limit his involvement in one or the other. Now he can't go full blast in both. And Harv's got the last word.
Yeah. Seems like Dr. Bob Rich would be an exception to that.
Yeah. And I was talking to Bob the other day. Any of you know Dr. Guy Chitello? Now, some of you know him. Well, he talked with me, came out to see me before he settled down there with Dr. Bob Bremner. Well, I saw Bob the other day and I said, how's Guy doing? He said, well, when he first came to town, he said, we had a good talk. And he said, the first thing I told him, he said, now don't try to duplicate what I'm doing. Dr. Bremner knows that. That he doesn't even know anybody that could do what he's doing. So we'll put him as an exception. He's not the rule. And that's the advice he gave to our friend Guy when he came there. He said, don't try to do what I'm doing. Don't measure your success in relation to me. He's a rare exception. And when Jerry White was a major in the Air Force, he was another exception. He was a regional director while he was an instructor at the academy and writing textbooks on the side. Yeah. Yeah, well, I certainly would advise him to lower his grades. But just on the base of what you said, Gene, I think probably he has he'd have another problem, communication problem. Now, I wouldn't advise him to approach it the way one of our fellows out in the Philippines did. But Gene Tabor noticed that whenever he came around the house, he attended the University of the Philippines, which was kind of the Harvard of the Philippines. And so somebody said, where do you go to school? And he gave him the name of the smallest college in the Philippines. And Gene said, how come you told him that? He said, well, he'd been reading the scripture that pride was a bad thing. And he said people kind of looked up to him when they found out he went to UP. So that's where he dealt with pride, was by telling him, you know, he went to a different school. So I don't think that's justifiable, but I think it's possible to make straight A's without attracting attention to oneself. And it seems to me that's his problem. But that's what you said, that when they say, who made the highest grade, you know, he... Yeah, I have a daughter-in-law like that, too. Throw her grades out when they make the curve. But, you know, we're talking about exceptions here. That isn't most of the guys' problems. You know, to make too high grades. Is it? Yeah.
I think we've seen where men who have excelled in their field have an unusual rapport with the other men and have a drawing card, not only in the business world, which we've seen in several situations, such as Jim Bob, who's here with us. He's vice president of a hospital. Well, his position is a drawing card. And I imagine there's some people that come to the Bible study because he's the one that started it. Same way with John Hollinsworth at the University at Western Union. Same way. But on a campus, even, when you've got an athlete who's well known and he's really good, he's really a drawing card. And one example I know of that, I don't know where we are on it now, is at the Naval Academy with, what's that guy's name? The big black guy on the...
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah. And within just a short period of time, he had twice as many guys as he could possibly work. Well, I think that was one of the reasons, so...
Yeah, well, Bob, you see, I think the general rule that I would say that a man needs to excel, but it may be, like Warren said, that he's got to take 12 hours instead of 20 in order to get the proper balance. And we've had a lot of guys that have taken 5 years to complete their college just because they wanted to be involved. We've had others that... have crammed 4 years into 10 for other reasons. Yeah.
I was wondering, an implication what you said before about affinity groups and about how gals have natural affinity regards to their education, career background, and stuff. It kind of made me wonder about the couples ministry. I was wondering if you'd comment on that.
Yeah, I would say that next occupational couples... you know, they're probably the next greatest affinity. And some people think it's the other way. But now I talked with Elvin Smith, who's had quite a couples ministry. And I asked him one day, I said, can you identify what you figure is the strongest group that you have? I don't know how many he had, 40 or 50. He said, yes. So he identified and then asked him some questions. And we found out that the strongest group that he had was where there was the closest occupational affinity among the men. So even a couples thing, you know, if you can subdivide it, you know, if you put the doctors together and the others together, it'll be even stronger. But couples of the same age do have a strong affinity.
The difference wasn't that for the fact that there's girls support that.
What was that?
The difference between the two is that girls are... had the same affinity before they're married, whereas guys, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I was talking about married women a while ago, but there's a degree. In single girls, of course, there's some counteracting factors in their affinity, too. So I think I wouldn't put single girls in the same class that would married women. Yeah.
When you identify a group that you have, an affinity group here, say, doctors or scientists or something along that line, and the vision, of course, you're trying to impart is this a multiplication. And these guys are all involved, say, in different churches or, say, even, you know, for the sake of simplicity, in the same church. Do you try to work in the context of that church or slowly draw them out of some of those activities, get them more involved in what you could do with them? As,
okay, let me answer that by telling you a story. And I want to answer the question that was brought up here a while ago. And if I don't cover yours totally, well, you tell me when to get the end, because I want to emphasize the other one that was asked. And that was, now what's the church's obligation for this? You mean that they're not supposed to do what we advocate? Several, 2 or 3 years ago, one of my friends who had been to the academy brought a pastor up. He was a pastor down in College Station, Texas. And he wanted to talk to me about leaving the pastorate and joining the Navigator staff because he saw what a few people were doing out there at Texas A&M. So I gave him some advice that he didn't take. But here's what I asked him. I said, you know, he's a successful pastor, a seminary-trained man, a good pastor, solid in the word, just everything you expect in a pastor. But when he contrasted what he was doing with what's going out on the campus, he couldn't see that that his ministry was that effective. So I said, do you have a doctor in your church? And he said, yes, I have a doctor in my church. I said, well, when you go back, you ask that doctor, what is your Christian objective? And he will probably answer you by saying, I'm a member of your church. What is the objective of the church? And you will probably tell him, the objective of my church is to minister to the body, to raise up some missionaries, and to raise up some money for missionary service, and to evangelize the community, you know, about four things we do. So then I ask you, how successful are you in your objective? Well, we minister to the body. We've sent some people overseas. We send money overseas. How about evangelizing the community? Well, we haven't done that. So the doctor will say, my, you know, I contribute and so forth, but as far as my personal ministry is concerned, I'm supposed to help the church evangelize the community. The church is not evangelizing the community. Therefore, I am not fulfilling my obligation as a Christian in evangelism. Okay. Now we say in the light of Acts 1:8, who do you think God has given the responsibility for evangelizing the doctors and the allied medical people in this city? Well, presumably, every Christian doctor is a member of a local church. And every other doctor is located within the geographic vicinity of a local church. So, the local church is supposed to evangelize the doctors in a city. But you have said your church isn't doing it. How about the others? They're not doing it either. So, the medical profession in this city is not being evangelized. Now, in the light of Acts 1:8, suppose you were to conclude that the medical profession is the responsibility of the Christian doctors. So why don't you tell that doctor, have I lost the sequence in the conversation here? Maybe God wants you to spearhead a movement to reach all the doctors in the city. Now, do you know some Christian doctors? Yeah. Well, why don't you have a meeting and pray and think about, maybe God wants us to reach the doctors in the city. And I said, as a pastor, you would probably excuse him from a couple of church activities a week if he had that as an objective. Well, he saw the point. I said, who else you got in your church? And he told me. And I said, you have got the potential of evangelizing the whole city. And you want to quit that and go out there on the campus and do what half a dozen people are doing on one campus. You know what he did? Left the church, went in training, Navigator training program, and flunked out about a year, and he's back where he belongs. Isn't that? Now, this seems a contradiction, doesn't it? The question came up earlier. And I think your question was, now, are we supposed to do all this? What is our relationship to the church? Well, if we could get the pastor to do this, then maybe we'd be out of a job. Maybe that's a better platform. But when I talk to pastors, I tell them that I really sympathize with them because I know what 2 Timothy 2:2 says. It says, the same commit to faithful men. Now, I said, where does 90% of your time go? The faithful or the unfaithful? Where does his time go? Faithful to the unfaithful. He is so preoccupied with the unfaithful that he hasn't got much time to get around to the faithful. Now, God loves the unfaithful. And the church has a ministry to the body. Now, maybe God is going to lay this primary responsibility on the church at some date in the future. But at this point, we think he has laid it on the navigators, and that our best outlet is to go ahead and do it among the age group we feel is most strategic, and to do all we can to see that this is an outreach of the church. But we are not reformers, and we're not going to tell a pastor what to do, but we're going to help him all that we can. Now, let's see. I was answering the other question mainly, and I'll come back with yours again here.
If we find these affinity groups, and we find some men, in other words, I think we can start working with, show some interest, say this doctor, and say you make contact with this doctor, and you start working with him. He knows several other doctors. And he is in this church, and some of these other doctors are in other churches. How do you then impart this ministry and this vision of multiplication to them within the context of the church? Or do you try to, you know, separate them more from the church? Or do you try to work through the pastor like you're bringing out there?
At this stage of the game, I think you find a lot of sympathetic pastors. But there's not very many of them you can recruit to do the job. So there's two things to do. One is communicate with the pastor what you're up to. And then the other is communicate to the doctor what you're up to. But you're not trying to get him out of the church. And he's a missionary. So his relationship is to the church is supposed to be the same as I've described for a navigator here tonight. Certain things that God wants him to get through the fellowship of the church. So that would be my answer to it.
It may limit, in other words, some of his activities in the church because he sees this as a priority, like you said the pastor wouldn't mind if he forego being in the choir Thursday night with more strategic
And maybe you know some pastors that object to this, but most of the pastors that I know, that is evangelicals, they're interested in evangelism, the Great Commission. And the only thing you got to do is let them know what you're up to. We said earlier that Christianity is the movement, and anything else is a sub-movement within that. Now, I don't think the navigators are interested in pedigrees. You know, such as we find guide out six generations, that unless he will trace his pedigree back to the navigators, that we think he has lost a vision or something. So, you know, that's the first part of it. Now, the second thing is, and this is a part of what Jim is studying, and he's going to talk to Bill Bright, who is the foremost authority in the United States on movements, I think. But what little we know about movements, just two or three things about them, that a movement requires a reproducible method and message. Now take a look at Campus Crusade. You know what the message is? Be filled with the Spirit and evangelize. Now you can indoctrinate a man into Campus Crusade in just about as long as I took to say that. What's Campus Crusade all about? Be filled with the Spirit and evangelize. What is the method? four spiritual laws. How do you evangelize? Four spiritual laws. They've got a movement. Now, in order to be successful, a movement must be perpetuated by fellow travelers. And that used to be a good word until it got mixed up in communism, but it's still a good word in the dictionary. Fellow traveler is one who furthers the objective of the organization without being a part of it or accountable to it. So the Navigators have not become a movement. We would like to become a movement, but we have not become a movement. One reason is that we do not have a reproducible method and message. How many times have you been called up to explain to somebody who the Navigators are? How long did it take you? And after you got through, did they know any more than they did when you started? It's not quite that clear. Our method is a little clearer, but we've got some refining to do. And we've got to find some motivated fellow travelers. We've got a few, but not in movement proportions, who are not a part of the organization or accountable to it. So, Johnny, we would like to see a movement. Well, we got some doing yet. Yeah. The objective of the organization.
And so they're dependable. They're dependent on by the leadership of that movement.
Yeah, I would say there's an informal tie, though.
Yeah.
There's no organizational tie.
Right. So they're not required to turn in a report and so on.
No.
But there's a loyalty factor there to the movement and to the vision.
Right. And several years ago, we put out, you know, about the, this has never been fulfilled, but we said, you know, that this is a Navigator organization, and this is a Navigator movement. And the purpose of the organization is to stimulate the movement. Now, we're still working on that. Yeah, here and then here. Up to this point in our history, the key to the growth of the Navigators is a representative in each team. The Navigators grows as our reps multiply. That's our history. Now, we don't want a huge organization around the world. But unless we learn something and God shows us something that we don't know now, that's the way the Navigators are going to grow, is through a rep and his men, because we have not found any way to keep the non-staff laborers laboring without, you know, staff motivation. Now, God may not want us to become a movement. I don't know, but that's, you asked the question, do we need to keep adding staff to get it done? At this point in history, that's the only way we know to grow. Okay? There's...
On the career ministry, the community ministry, it seems that a lot of our people are not really attracted to that type of ministry because they don't have enough contacts within their job or occupation. Like every day you see the same 10 men. And none of them are open, or maybe one of them are. So we were kind of raised up when we have a big man power pool where we reach out and reach the base or reach the campus. It just seems like, and then you have to give most of the time when you're at work to the job. And then off to the job, you know, the guys don't really want to get with you. So it seems like a lot of guys I've talked to are not really attracted to that type of ministry.
Yeah, and this particular fellow you described, that his occupation might not be his primary affinity. His neighborhood might, or his golfing partners might, or somebody else. So he's got to find it. And well, that could very easily be that his occupation is not his primary affinity group.
Affinity groups can be a little broader than just one occupation also, can it, Jim? Can it be kind of a, like dentists and doctors and groups of...
Yeah, what I've used the word allied, you know, allied groups.
Yeah.
And, of course, the nurses... You know, on the whole thing. There's another question or comment back here. Yeah. That hasn't been the primary motivation, but those that have studied movements, you know, now Bright, of course, he knows this, and the communists know this, that literature is indispensable to a movement. And we haven't gone about it directly, but then we recognize the importance of it in a movement.
A church that starts using Navigator's Handbook from Science School class, so they don't have a navigator in their church.
I would say at least they're associate fellow travelers anyway. The Navigators have had three big boosts in material sales. The first one was when Back to the Bible broadcast began to plug Navigator materials. The next is when the Billy Graham organization, actually the reverse order, Billy Graham, Back to the Bible. And then after Kennedy's book, Jim Kennedy's book came out on explosion, explosion evangelism came out. You know, he gave us a part of his thing, you use Navigator books for this, this, and this. And we had another big surge of orders out of that. So the materials we sell this year are going to gross more than $1 million. So people are using them, and I think effectively. So if these people are not full-fledged fellow travelers, they're associate fellow travelers anyway. John? I don't know. Yeah, I can give you an example. My wife teaches the... she teaches the Bible Study Fellowship here in town. You know, he's got 450 women. They limit to 450 women, then they rotate in and out. And, you know, she's made a lot of disciples and disciple makers under a different hat. But when it gets down to the vitals in the Christian life, what does she teach them? What does she use? She uses that. So there's a lot of fellow travelers that have come out of her Bible studies. Yeah, John?
It seems to me like there's kind of two hang-ups we have in this movement. One is that we see people who are using Navigator materials in Sunday school classes, and down deep we think, oh, but they're really not Navigatorizing the people. And so we kind of, we aren't really encouraging them and supporting them
Now, I think we've got a problem in that because we feel, and to be a navigator, you know, he's got to be a disciple maker at least. And unless it leads up to that, why, he hasn't made the grade. But I think we need some inner reflection on this, and we don't need to judge everybody. Now, as far as navigator materials in a Sunday school, yeah, I spent 2 weeks ago this Sunday night all evening after church with my pastor. And he was asking a lot of questions and about using navigator materials in a church. I said, it'll never work. And he said, what do you mean it won't work? He said, I'm using it with my Sunday school class of young couples right now. And I said, well, I still say it'll never work. And then before the evening is over, he admitted it wasn't working for this reason. I said, if you want to have a lot of fun in your church, you give a spiritual examination to everybody in it. And then you group people, not by age, but by spiritual, by biblical knowledge. And you'll have 80-year-olds and 10-year-olds in the same class. Now, we group them by age. But any Sunday school class, you run the gamut in Bible knowledge, in dedication, and in motivation. So you've got to pitch it to the lowest member of the group. The navigator material works when you get a group of people together that have the same degree of motivation and dedication. Then you can make it work. But you can't pitch it to the lowest person and expect the other people to catch on. Yeah.
Right along with that, Dan, part of the problem perhaps then comes from the high standard of excellence that's been put down in the navigator so far, that it's hard to transfer that into a lot of other contexts, like the church context. Do I read that right?
Yeah. And we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to judge the church. We help them all we can. But the way we help them is to take some faithful people, 2 Timothy 2:2, that kind of people, and we will help them. Now, I teach a Sunday school class most of the time, but every once in a while I take a vacation from teaching. And the reason that I do is that I have a hard time to be motivated with a bunch of people that are not regular in attendance. You know, that class doesn't mean that much to them. That some little old thing can come up and they'll drop it like everything. See, there's no degree of dedication in there. So what I want to do is find some people that have a degree of motivation, dedication, get them aside where there can be some regularity and so forth. So I don't think we're supposed to introduce our standards into the Sunday school. And we don't judge them. Just pray for them, wish them God's blessing, and if the pastor or teacher wants some help, then we find 2 Timothy 2:2 people, some faithful people, and help them because they'll grow. Yes?
Can the affinity for a group be, like, say, several couples and some single people just being young Christians? Can that be the affinity for them and a desire to grow, a desire for the group?
Yeah, I think that in affinity, you know, you can just plot it out. And I think that everybody in their own area should look around and say, what's the highest affinity thing I can get together? And I can see a case where it could be a mixture like that. Now, I don't think that would be perpetuating, you know, that when the thing divided, why, it'd be a little more definitive. But I just use occupation as a start. Dave?
Just go back to the relationship with the church accomplishing our objectives, but I'm just wondering what we're learning in working with the church and accomplishing our objectives and having our role as a prophet. What I'm thinking of is church context or be broader and pulling from several churches? What trends are we seeing that are?
In both these cases, you cite that the pastor has been fully sold, that one of the best things he could do for his people, you know, is to get a navigator in there at work. And, of course, in large churches like both these are, there's all a navigator rep can do full time in that. So I would suppose that we hope the time will come that we could furnish a rep for every church that had an outlook like that. But at this point, we don't have them. And we want people to, you know, keep as broad an outlook as possible as to where the long-range effect will be. But I think both cases you cited, you know, that's the right thing that's been done. But that's the exception. I know a pastor here in town told one of our staff members, I don't know who it was once, he said, I can tell you, every member of my church who's in contact with a navigator. I thought that was quite a compliment. You know, he would see something begin to happen in that. He was all for it. But we didn't have any relationship with him. You know, he was just willing for him to come in, listen to the message and so forth. But he saw it in his own congregation. He said, I can tell you, every one of them. Well, I think that we won't cover the third point here tonight. Save that for another time. Maybe we should kind of wrap this up. I hope the 2 hours hasn't been wasted here. But we need some help. Jim Peterson needs some help as he's spearheading the project on now. What are the universals? And before we get to that, you know, we got to sort out a few other things. Any comment or question? Johnny?
I was just going to ask about your first point. You said that you wanted to ask a question on them about non-NAT staff not having meetings.
Do you want me to comment on that? Okay, some of you have heard this before in another context. I explained to Jim Peterson the other day, you know, I said, well, we got a theory on this. I went to a seminar up in Milwaukee, University of Wisconsin, 3 or 4 years ago, called Motivation and Productivity. And I was interested in motivation. The reason I went there, having concluded that my problem was not a lack of knowledge or lack of experience. The reason I wasn't functioning was a lack of motivation to put into practice the experience and knowledge that I had. So I wanted to learn all I could about motivation. So that's really what the seminar was all about. Well, in the context of this 3 days, they did a little resume of what Dr. McClellan of Harvard had discovered, having studied this subject for 30 years and done research. He concluded that there are 3 basic motivations. The first one is power. Power-motivated people. Power-motivated people are mostly capitalists and politicians. They like to influence the behavior of other people. Now, there are only a small percentage of people in the world that are power motivated. But the guys that are announcing for president in 76, what motivates them? Is it the salary? What is it? They want to influence other people's lives, for good or for bad. The second group of people, and the first two groups together, are less than 10% of the population of any country. And that is the achievement motivated. The achievement-motivated individual has three qualities. First of all, he's a man who must set his own goals. Second, he must innovate his own methods. The third thing is, he requires constant and immediate feedback. Constant and immediate feedback as to how he's doing with his methods in relation to his goals. The perfect profile of an achievement-oriented person is a salesman. He sets his goals, he innovates his methods, he knows every day when he adds up his sales slips how his methods have worked toward his goals. Now, as I said, less than 10% of the population of the world is highly motivated, either as a power-motivated or an achievement-oriented. The other 90% are affiliation-motivated. And their primary interest in life is what people think of them. They want the approval of people. This is more important to them than anything else. People like this have been known to refuse supervisory jobs because they would have to make decisions that would affect some person adversely. They don't want anybody to not like them. Now, this person is not a goal setter, and he is not an innovator. But he'll kill himself working for the achiever who will help him set his goals, innovate his methods, and he is so interested in his approval that he'll kill himself carrying him out. So you get a team of guys together, and they're very, very effective. And because they're so effective, we assume that they're all potential team leaders. So we divide them up. And it may be that, you know, a team leader's got five team members. He puts them out on their own, and all five of them will bite the dust. They do not have the capability to set goals and innovate methods. All the capability they have is to follow somebody whose approval they want. Now, I feel that this is the problem, you see, that I don't know the answer to, on how do you keep the non-staff motivated laborers laboring. It seems like in our history, it's like you're going to be able to have a cookout and get the briquettes. You got a red hot one in the middle, and you put a bunch around it like this, what happens? Nothing. The only way that'll spread is that you got to have a tangency with the red one. And we got a lot of alumni that we set out by themselves. Now, he's been well indoctrinated. He doesn't backslide, but he sure cools off as far as the navigators are concerned. And the only way you can keep him red hot is to keep him in warm contact with somebody that's active in the navigators. So, how are we going to do that? As I said, our history so far has shown that our expansion, we grow as our reps grow. That's our history up to this point. Maybe God doesn't want us to be a movement. Maybe the future of the navigators, as I said, the emerging image, is we simply move into new affinity groups. Now, we have said, what is the minimum contact required? Is it to send him a log? Yeah, we don't know. If the minimum contact we need to keep a man motivated is through literature, then we can do it. But at this point, we don't know. So, Johnny, that's what I was going to say, you know, about our problem in keeping the non-staff motivated labor laboring. Bob?
Maybe in defining the problem of the movement, could we call a movement a mission? Are we a mission?
Well, we certainly got a mission. You know, is it the organization's mission or is it the movement's mission? I think that's what it boils down to. And we would like to transfer it from the mission of an organization to the mission of a movement. But we don't know how to do that yet. John?
You mentioned that you had some ideas on this, how to keep the non-staff navigate. Could you give some ideas?
Now, if I had... I don't think I said I had some ideas on how to make it work. What I meant was I had some ideas on why it's a difficult problem. I have some ideas on it, but I don't mean any workable ideas. And I think this is the reason it's a problem. That, you know, if you agree with this profile of an achiever, I think you'll agree that the navigators have kind of specialized in building up a staff of achievers. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that some of the organizations have a little bit more of a movement than the navigators have. This seems like, you said, the old boys a little bit more of a master at making the movement. As I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, possibly could your organization be achieving their own primary goal within the movement? If our basic commodity is a disciple and the organization headed by your staff reproduces themselves, the only thing that's going to make it, effectively make that basic commodity, then the movement will never make it. But if you have if your movement or the organization is making another commodity, something with a little lower standards, something that's easy for anyone to pick up and make, can the organization make the disciples do it?
Yeah, well, we you know, got to be a little careful what we say to the world. On this cut, we're saying is, you know, well, anybody can do what's easy. And the reason we got problems is because we're doing tough. Now, I think we do have a little bit of problem in terminology. As I read the Bible, it seems to me that convert and disciple are interchangeable words in the New Testament. And we had Dr. Peters from Dallas Theological Seminary here with us at a conference we had this fall. And he knows a little bit about the navigators. And he said, you claim that you're raising up disciples. But he says, what you're raising up is apostles. So we take the Bible, disciple, and maybe put an apostle profile on him. However, this isn't the crucial point. Whether he's a convert or disciple. The word disciple maker is a scriptural word. And so we don't apologize for it. If there's a disciple someplace, somebody made him. So I think what you're saying is, you know, that one reason our movement doesn't come as easy as some others is because that we've got a little tougher curriculum. And I think that's right. Any person who is highly enough motivated can pick up our written instructions and carry it out. But this is a key part, is motivating the person, isn't it? And that may be one reason we have to keep in such close contact with each other, to keep each other motivated. But a motivated person, yeah, can pick up our written material, I think, and he's got the message and the method. Bob?
Part of it is a sense of destiny, an inner, you know, what causes one person to be self-motivated and another person to have to be outwardly motivated. Could part of it be just the sense of destiny that a person has? And that God, it doesn't give that to every man.
I think that the achievement-motivated person, it's a matter of genes and chromosomes. You know, that's the way God made him. And that's the way God made the affiliator. He made him like he is, too. And one's not better than the other. You know, God made both of them first class. So what we have to figure out is how to get the most mileage out of the combination. Yeah, and that would prevent anything as complicated as the Navigators from ever becoming a movement. Well, Harv, what do you think?
One last question. At the outset, you said you had a verse and a half, and I got 1 Corinthians 3:11.
Okay.
What's the half?
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. In my arch illustration, I put 1 Corinthians 3:11 at the bottom, and I wanted to put Ephesians 4. Several verses say the same thing, but 5 and 6. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who's above all and through all and in you all. So that no matter whether we're the church or the movement, we've got the same foundation and the same head. That's the other half verse. Okay, Harf, let me give it back to you.